And welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name's Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of October 23rd, 2022. As of now, the global carbon dioxide level is 416.01 parts per million, well above the target of 350 parts per million that is considered safe. And there are 2,627 days left until the year 2030, by which time we need to cut our emissions by 50% globally. Anyway, the international discussions about climate change at a very high level grind on underneath the United Nations oversight, right? There's the United Nations framework, which convenes different kinds of meetings on a regular basis to try and get the governments of the world to talk to each other and take action. You've probably heard of these things. They're called conferences of the parties being the different states, different countries, right? The COP, Conference of the Parties, and they're held pretty much annually. The next one is coming up this November. Of course, you may remember the most famous Conference of the Parties happened in 2015. The COP in Paris was the place that signed the Paris Accord, which is the most fundamental piece of international law related to climate change that we have. Anyway, the next Conference of the Parties is coming up in November. It turns out that the Conference of the Parties has generally been a kind of a disappointing thing. There was one last year in Glasgow that was essentially flooded with oil lobbyists, and there's a lot of self-serving rhetoric, but that never goes anywhere, or rarely goes anywhere, so it's very hard to make progress. It's kind of a distressing prospect. But they did produce the Paris Accord at one point when there was enough coherence. Let's hope we get back there. Anyway, this November, the Conference of the Parties meeting will be held in Egypt, which is an interesting choice. And on the one hand, it's right in the Middle East where a lot of fossil fuels are produced, but it is in Africa where a lot of the problems with climate change will come home to roost. Egypt's not quite a flourishing democracy, and there's lots of questions about the rights of people who would want to attend this conference. Lots going on, but long or short of it, the Conference of the Parties, COP, is being held in November in Egypt for this year. And one of the issues that is being brought up to be discussed or is in the news that should be discussed at this conference, and more than discussed, we would hope that the Conference of the Parties would move to some sort of credible action, right? Not unlike the Paris Accords, where something actually was signed to do things, there is this topic that keeps popping up, which we ought to know about. Right? It goes under the generic name loss and damage. Right, so you see that loss and damage as being an important thing to know about if you are thinking about international climate negotiations, and it kind of sets a standard for us, you know, mental tools to think about the whole issue of climate change. So what do we mean when we say loss and damage as a climate topic to be discussed at the Conference of the Parties? Well, you can Google it. There's huge amounts of information, lots of different perspectives. I don't pretend to be able to cover all of them, but I did want to touch on some of the baseline understandings of what what's going on so that you can get your head around it. And what we'll refer to is a nice kind of question and answer description from the World Resources Institute. We'll put up a link to it in the show notes. All right. So according to that article, loss and damage as a phrase and as a subject of discussion in climate circles is kind of a general, somewhat imprecise term. It's not precisely defined yet, but mostly what it means is that there are consequences of climate change, right, that go beyond what a country can adapt to, can handle, right? There are, as I say, consequences that go beyond what a country could adapt to, and it may be a circumstance where something's happening and the country just doesn't have the resources to do the adaptation, right? Can't build a seawall because they don't have enough money, right? There are countries out there, as you well know, that don't have those kind of resources. And so the loss and damage sort of refers to these things that happen to people that can't protect themselves, right? That can't adapt. No, we won't go into the whole discussion of, you know, the moral hazards of adapting and building a seawall, blah, blah, blah. There's lots of whole discussion there, but suffice it to say, there are places in the world that will be negatively affected by climate change, cannot adapt to it, or don't have the resources to adapt to it. And those countries and the people who live there will suffer loss and damage. Right? And in a sense, the fact that all of this stuff is being visited most heavily upon the people least likely to be able to handle it, in whatever sense you want to say handle climate change, that becomes a climate justice issue, right? Something that we need to be aware of and address. I mean, what kind of examples of loss and damage are there? Well, I mean, the most obvious one and the poster child for the whole thing is, say, the South Pacific nation, island nations of the South Pacific, right? Bali, Samoa, right? These places, when the sea levels rise, they literally disappear, right? They can't build a seawall big enough to stop the ocean or protect their aquifer. The fresh water they get that is somehow protected from the ocean water surrounding the island, right? So that's a poster child for the kind of loss and damage that you can't do anything about. And those people are basically at a loss. They're damaged and they've lost something precious, right? Of course, there's other kinds of examples of loss and damage. There's desertification, right? Where all of a sudden the farm that used to be on is now no longer arable. Sea level rise affects whole countries like Bangladesh, right, where millions, hundreds of millions of people live within a few feet of sea level, right? That's not a good situation when the sea levels are rising. So there are examples of places where the damage of climate change is real and there's just very little capacity to do anything about it, to either adapt or protect the people, etc. And so now you get into this concept, those people suffer loss and damage from climate change. And again, you go back to Bangladesh or Pacific Islands or sub-Saharan Africa, those people did not cause climate change, right? But they are suffering the consequences. And that's where this loss and damage issue is particularly poignant, because most of the loss and damage are being suffered in the less developed parts of the world, the global south, where there's much less capacity to respond to the consequences of climate change. Right? Not good. This World Resources Institute article goes on and talks about you can break up the losses into a couple different kinds, right? There's economic loss from climate change that a country may not be able to recover from. And one of the examples they give is, of, again, a place like Bangladesh, which historically has been able to farm salt from the ocean because of the geography. As the sea level rises, that industry is destroyed. Right? No way to get it back. So now all those people are out of work, the economy's in shambles, and there they are. Right? Didn't cause it, but they're suffering the loss and damage. There's a separate kind of loss and damage that you can think of, which is non-economic, a little bit more hard to get your arms around, but it is the loss of the way of life, a cultural thing. Right? You can think of people in Alaska, Canadian coast, Inuit tribes, right? First peoples, the salmon fisheries, the whales, I mean, they're all going away. The seacoast is crumbling. They cannot live the way they used to live. The cultural around that, all that stuff is just gone, right? And so, you know, all those people should move to Fairbanks and buy a TV, right? It's loss of the cultural and civic nature of the lives people had that is hard to put economic value on, but it's very real, and it's certainly a loss and a damage. Okay? So there you go. Loss and damage talks about the consequences of climate change that either cannot be adapted to, or people don't have the resources to try and even attempt the adaptation. Those things mostly occur, that loss and damage, that circumstance occurs mostly in the global south, among people who have had the least to do with causing global warming. That right raises the question of who did cause global warming. Well, the people who have historically, I mean, just a fact, historically, the United States, Europe, have been leaders in extracting wealth from the global south, burning fossil fuels, becoming wealthy in the process, again, visiting damage on the global south by what we've done over the last 100, 150 years. So anyway, if you go to the COP meeting and want to talk about loss and damage, you're going to bump into things like the three words they use are to avert damage, to minimize the damage, or to address the damage, right? To avert the loss and damage, to minimize the loss and damage, and to address the loss and damage. Well, averting the loss and minimizing the loss syncs up with what's called mitigation. These are all buzzwords. Mitigation, which is reducing carbon emission levels globally, right? That's what we're all talking about. Green energy, reduce your carbon dioxide pollution, right? That's one path to avert loss and damage. Another is to minimize loss and damage is adaptation, right? Building seawalls, you know, trying to help replant the mangrove trees, et cetera, et cetera. And the last is addressing loss and damage. Again, these are buzzwords that are built into the discussion so that people can have some shared vocabulary. Addressing loss and damage means money, means aid and paying money to the people who have suffered the loss and damage as a way of trying to make recompense, somehow assist in some kind of a recovery. Right? And of course, that, once you start talking money, everyone clutches their pearls and says, oh my God, well, you know, the developed world, United States, Europe, can't afford to spend that much money. I know I'm being satirical and mocking, but like, they feign innocence and say, oh, we're too poor to support the many billions of dollars that would be needed to help the billions of people in the global south. And that's where the conversation has stalled out. Right? Over the last 30 years, there have been repeated calls for the developed countries of the world, that is the United States, Europe particularly, to, and increasingly now China, but let's just say, I mean, over the last 150 years, it's been Europe and the United States, to take a lead in helping other people. Right? And the United States and Europe have not done that. Lots of fancy promises about how much money they're going to send and, you know, green banks and helping out and whatnot. But the money never materializes for the people in the global south who could use it now, right? Because there are already devastations happening. I don't know if you follow, but, you know, parts of Africa are inundated with floods from excess rainfall, all this kind of stuff. What I'm short of is the developed world, and let's say that means the United States, has caused the problem and is now running away from paying for the solution or paying to make some sort of recompense about the whole thing. And this has gone on for a long time, and which is why this Conference of the Parties in Egypt in November is a venue to again try and discuss how to manage the loss and damage. It's an interesting, just as a sidelight, kind of tangential, but it's an interesting question. I mean, colonialism, most people don't really, I can't say I am an expert, but you know, colonialism is just kind of this buzzword you see occasionally and kind of blow off because it's too big a concept. But the fact is the Europe and the United States, Europe in particular, England in particular, extracted huge amounts of wealth from its colonies over the centuries, right? I mean, trillions of dollars alone came out of India to go back to England, right? It made England wealthy and famous, right? And that was just regarded as the right of England to extract wealth from its colonies. That's colonialism, right? The people who lived there were secondary to the transfer of wealth to the rich folks in Europe, right? Colonialism is taking over another country for its resources. Right? So in a similar way, and I guess I just, you know, don't think about the American colonies as some sort of romantic thing. I mean, that think about Belgium, right? King Leopold's ghost in Belgium extracting rubber and hands from Belgium, right? So colonialism is a nasty thing that extracts value from other parts of the world for the benefit of the colonizer, typically in Europe. But in many ways, there's a parallel to that, because even today, the United States is, in a sense, colonizing the air over the global south. I mean, we put our carbon pollution into the air and essentially, through natural processes, park it over Africa and over the Pacific Islands, right, without permission, just because we think we can. And then we all go forward, and the global south suffers the consequence of that colonial dumping of our pollution, right? And there you go. So it's one way to think about what's going on is a colonization of the air by the rich countries to put their waste there to the detriment of third world countries. Anyway, that's just... put that aside for a minute. Anyway, we're back to the COP, Conference of the Parties in Egypt. We want to have a discussion about loss and damage and actually do something about it. It turns out that this has been made real in some ways recently because a group of countries that are parties to the conference, right, they call themselves the Vulnerable 20. The V20 countries, and include people, countries in Africa, South Pacific, right, and the places that are getting the bad end of the deal. They have told the World Bank, which again is a United Nations organization, blah, 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 is supposed to loan money to help develop third world countries, but in fact, loans money and then the third world countries owe interest rates they can't pay, right? So this terrible cycle of things. These vulnerable 20, the V20 countries have said, we don't want to pay that debt anymore to the World Bank, right? $685 billion, they say, we're just going to stop paying you. Keep that money as what you could call a debt swap as part of the loss and damage negotiations, right? Because on top of all the other bad stuff. I mean, the World Bank, many of these less developed countries are locked into a loan cycle where they have to borrow money to recover from the climate damage, but then the interest rates are so high they can't pay for it, and they have to borrow more money. They go deeper and deeper into debt. They're debtor nations, and the World Bank is basically sitting on it because the World Bank is run by the people in the United States and Europe. Right? It's kind of a bad thing. So the idea that these countries that are already under the gun, the vulnerable 20, already under the gun, just start refusing to pay off those loans and instead use that money to try and build their economies and adapt to climate change is one proposal to solve the loss and damage issue. Right? Probably not enough long term, but it certainly makes the whole thing concrete, right? That here's a specific way you can act, that is to say, forgive the debt or some portion of the debt of these countries so that they can have some resources to try to begin to address climate change now as they see their own risk, right? But of course, if history is any predictor, the central banks of Europe and the United States will not like that very much and will be back in the same kettle of fish. Right? But anyway, that's just some background. So as we go into November and you see articles about, I think it's 27, COP number 27 being held in Egypt, and if you see references to loss and damage, that's the background on it and what the debate is. And I think for me, the take home is that the countries like the United States should be much more aggressive in assisting other countries of the world to cope with the damage of climate change that has been visited upon them through no fault of their own by countries like the United States. I mean, as a moral calculus, it all becomes pretty obvious. But there you go. Calculus is hard to understand sometimes, huh? Anyway, we'll put up links to what we discussed on the MCAN blog. You can find that at massclimateaction.net. Go to newsletter and more, pull down the blog and podcast option, and there you'll find the those links and the link to listen to the show. While you're on the MCAN website, please go over to the donate button, smash that donate button, and give $20 to MCAN. The organization is doing good work. You should support it. If you have any questions about, any comments about this show or questions or new ideas, please send them to podcast@massclimateaction.net. Let us know what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly. You're probably listening to the show on your smartphone using a modern podcast distribution app. We're on all of them. Please ask your friends to listen to us on their modern podcast distribution app. We want to thank our good friend D.R. Tucker for his continuing research support. And we want to close where we always close, by saying that we recognize the necessity of personal accountability, that we accept responsibility for building a durable future, and that we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out. And because of that, we have to insist that the United States transform its energy sector over the next decade under a just and equitable plan that uses regulation, investment, and a price on carbon that respects environmental justice communities. So, thanks for listening. I hope you know a little bit more now than you did before. See you again next week. Bye-bye.
Very cool.